The Jay Young Show is a weekly podcast featuring insightful discussions with anyone from big business CEOs, celebrities, to military heroes. Each interview is a personal conversation about business, life, and anything in between. And now, your host, Jay Young.
Hey everybody, this is Jay Young, the Jay Young Show. Thank you for coming aboard today. We're going to have a great interview today with Mark Parmalee. He is the president of Golden Tree Restaurants, which includes Golden Chick, Jalapeno Tree out in East Texas, Fireside Pies, Texadelphia, JC's Burger Bar, Hef's, Lola's, State 28? Anyway, we'll talk about that in just a minute.
Okay.
Welcome, Mark, to the show.
Well, thank you, Jay. It's a pleasure to be here.
I tell you, what a great brand. I mean, you're building an incredible brand here. I mean, What got you started in this business? Tell me about your background.
Okay. Well, let's go way back. And I felt like I needed a car at 16 when I was 15. And my parents said, that's great. How are you going to pay for it? So I became a dishwasher at a restaurant at the age of 15. And I actually worked my way up and around and to different levels of cook, and you know, I enjoyed it. And then as new restaurants would come into town, I would go put in an application. I really didn't care what position they had. So I've been a busboy, I've been all kinds of things. And my senior year in high school, I had one credit to take, so I took typing early in the morning, and I worked full time at the new Steak and Ale.
There you go.
I started as a busboy there and ultimately became the kitchen manager. And they said I did such a great job, I shouldn't go to college and I should travel around the country opening Steak and Ales. But
there's a path right there.
There was a big Y in the road. I went ahead and went to college thinking I might become a real estate developer, and then I was going to take real estate all the way through to law, real estate law, and then somewhere along the line I said, I don't know if I want to spend that much time and money on a piece of paper that I would not use in practice. So I had said that I really missed the restaurant business. So my mother and another person had said, well, you ought to check into the hotel and restaurant school at Cornell. So I did and transferred, and you know, that set me on my path. I interviewed with Steak and Ale and one other firm, Laventhal and Horwath, that was an accounting firm, and I came to Dallas working for them.
Steak and Ale didn't want you after you got smart, or?
No, they wanted me. I just thought that going to work in the consulting side of an accounting firm, doing hotel studies, feasibility studies, and P&Ls. And it was true. It turned out to be like a grad school, only I got paid. The basics of, you know, just even writing a report and the analysis and learning about pro formas and analyzing P&Ls, and it was really the, you know, right place at the right time. I had clients like Trammell Crow and Holiday Inns, and got a chance to be involved in the Mansion on Turtle Creek and the Anatole and Hyatt Regency, and even the West End, which back then all it had was Old Spaghetti Warehouse.
So the Palm Restaurant was there. Was that before then?
That was before the Palm, I think.
Wow.
Yeah, it's kind of showing my age, I guess.
Early 80s?
Yeah.
I think early 80s. Yeah. I think my mom owned Razzmatazz. The bar Razzmatazz, restaurant bar,
yeah,
right next to the Palm.
Oh, okay.
And that was in 84, 84, 85.
Yeah, see, I graduated 77 and worked for Leventhal for about 3 years. So
okay,
so it'd been late 70s.
Yeah, okay. So that was a great path. I mean, so to learn all about financials and P&Ls, if they're making money or not making money, what's working, what's not working, but also performance. So that really helped you, I'm sure, with your career, talking about all these different restaurants and all these different restaurant chains and all that. I'm sure it really helped.
Yeah, and I got to do operational audits of restaurants. And, you know, all of that, you learned a little bit of, about a lot of things through the process. So how to look at market share. And, you know, of course, now there's plenty of computer programs to do this. But old school, you'd have to call the highway department for traffic counts. And you'd have to go interview GMs or whoever you could find at the hotel level to try to see if you could get occupancy and average rate out of someone. And, you know, it was just, there was plenty of shoe leather, which is still necessary today, but you get to do, get a lot of homework without leaving your laptop.
Gotcha. So you get involved in Golden, the Golden Chick in 89. So in 80, what happened between 80 and 89?
Well,
where was your career then?
I tried, after Leventhal, I had a couple of different clients offer me a job. And I went the path of working for a man named Lance McFadden, who has passed away a couple of years ago, but was an absolute marketing genius. Hmm. And he was a hard worker, worked long hours. One thing I picked up from him I thought was very interesting is he at the time was into what I call high energy saloons, Todd's, Alon, Cowboy. And so we did these large facilities and they'd be hot for 2-3 years and then look at the next trend. So Lance would, he took GQ and D Magazine in Atlanta and Rolling Stone and all of these things. And he read all of this, trying to get on top of trends and see if he could, you know, see what's happening now, but if he could, if it also gave him a peek into the future. So, you know, he might take something that was disco, and turn it into Urban Cowboy, you know, seeing a different trend. And then in 2 or 3 years, well, there may be something else. And so I was involved with those, and those things made a lot of money. So we tried to take some of that fast, easy money and put it into harder long-term assets. So we developed strip centers. And then a time came where his nephew, who I worked with through Lance, whose name happens to be Lance as well, we spun off the real estate and we did Compaq Computers' first headquarters. We did grocer anchored centers and movie theater anchored centers, bought big tracts of land just about in time for the big crash.
I was thinking about that.
So
yeah.
So from there, my wife had an opportunity to transfer to New York, and so I got to play investment banker, and I went from I'm sure you remember Drexel Burnham, and so as that started to bust apart, some of the partners started these smaller firms. And so I worked for one of these in a very small firm, and it, and again gave me an opportunity to see a bunch of different things. I had an all-nighter when we tried to buy the Pan Am shuttle, and got to see firsthand negotiations to convince a union to give some concessions. and to see what all went into that. I got sent over to Guam and Saipan by the founder of DHL to see why resorts were only on one side of the island, and he thought he could buck the trend. But I learned about weather and rip currents, and quickly found out why they only develop on one side of the island.
Oh, wow. Interesting.
But a lot of those kinds of different things I got to see as an investment banker. And then a friend of mine said, hey, Golden Fried Chicken, it actually is in bankruptcy, and it's really good chicken, and they were a franchisee, and why don't you come home and let's you know, you be our operating partner, invest with us. And so I came down not having the intention to run it, the franchisees kept telling me the guy who is running this is a liar, cheat, a thief, and you have to fire him. So, well, I don't have to fire anybody I've never met, but if he is all you say, I'll probably figure it out sooner or later. So as they turned out, it was right. They really were right. So I rolled up my sleeves to be president for a little while till we found someone else to plug in. And I guess a little while has grown to be over 30 years.
Awesome.
Yeah.
That's great. Good for you. So it was just an idea, or was it somebody said, hey, there's this franchisor, I'm assuming.
Yes.
You're the franchisor in Austin at the time. So you came down and bought the franchisor. And then would you just go to these different places and put an ad or something in and sell franchises? How's that work? I'm really not sure.
Well, there's a bunch of different ways to do it. The single best is success begets success. So if your franchisees are making money, and or people drive by and they see a restaurant's busy, and you know, and they or we you, friends of franchisees are envious of the franchisee that gets to buy a brand new truck every year.
Right.
It begins to generate interest.
And they say, oh, this store is doing this, and then I can move one
right
2 miles, 5 miles, or 10 miles over, or wherever you positioned them. Did you start in Texas, or was there already Golden Chicks in Austin?
There were. They really were all over Texas. There was 63 at the time.
63?
Yeah.
In 89?
In 1989.
Okay.
So, And there were some unhappy franchisees because of the past administration. And the founder was like Ray Kroc in the sense that he became an entrepreneur late in life. So when somebody came to him and offered him a nice bit of money, he was in an age where he was happy to take that money. Unfortunately, the buying group, it didn't work out real well. But part of that was because the economy was going down, and so a lot of the fellow's investments were not doing well. So it just became a sort of a cyclical thing, and ultimately it led to him declaring personal bankruptcy, and then that kind of drug Golden Fried Chicken into it. But not only the franchisees not liking him, but creditors didn't either, and he couldn't get a plan approved under Chapter 11. So he put it into bankruptcy, into 7, and it ended up wasn't his plan, but it ended up going on the blocks, and we made a bid, and it was accepted by the trustee, and there we go. Off we go.
Back in 89.
Yeah.
So you mentioned before the interview something about the real estate or the dirt. Does all the franchisees own that dirt, or do you own the dirt, or do you split it, or
well,
how does that normally work?
I We own about 20% of the real estate. So we're not only the franchisor, but at least to a portion of the stores, we're a landlord, which is a model that works real well for McDonald's and Chick-fil-A and others. And we are certainly a minuscule version of that. But it, you know, it provides stability, provides some income as well. So we enjoy doing that, particularly when it's really close to home. And then, you know, if somebody struggles, I mean, we've got the opportunity to make it a company store or, you know, plug in another franchisee. So, and it helped develop some momentum, because for many years we were pretty slow grow. I really ran the chain as a for-profit co-op. I wanted to make sure that all the franchisees were, you know, earning money and doing well. And we had quite a few things to tweak and fix, including the name. A lot of people think we changed to Golden Chick just to get fried out of the name. But that really wasn't the case. It was a good byproduct, but the Golden Fried Chicken was deemed too generic to get a trademark. You know, as I mentioned to you before our interview, I mean, it's like driving by a place that says donuts. I mean, you know, you can't yeah. trademark that. So, but we knew there was good equity in the name Golden associated with our chain. And we had this golden color awnings. And so Golden Chick was about as close as we could get. And we got a federal registration and on we ran. Wow. I think getting fried out of the name was helpful. My friend Stephen Piles came in and developed a great roasted chicken product that none of our direct competitors have anything even close to it. It's got a great flavor, it's juicy, and it's, you know, it's an alternative to fried. And as much as I love all of our beige food, it's nice to have, you know, some alternatives to that. So, and he developed a gourmet chicken salad, which Zagat actually recognized, probably, you know, much to the chagrin of some of my fellow Cornellians that are high dollar restaurateurs. And Mark is the one that gets the Zagat recognition, but you know.
That's great. So how many stores are you only in Texas?
We are Texas, Oklahoma.
Golden Chick is now in Texas, Oklahoma.
Oklahoma, South Carolina, Florida.
Wow.
And we've signed an agreement with an existing franchisee to go to Las Vegas. And I missed Louisiana. We went into Baton Rouge last year and been very successful.
I bet.
And that franchisee plans to grow. So, we've gone from pretty much a local, if you use the state of Texas as local, but to now regional, and we've got plenty of gaps to fill in.
Yeah.
The rest of Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama, Georgia, I think we're all good markets. We use psychographic analysis in which a couple of different firms have helped us out. They'll take every store and they'll look at the demographic buckets that are out there, and they'll say, your lesser stores seem to have this demographic, but your high volume stores have these, and therefore they take and do all of this magic and come up with, you know, here are the places you really need to be. And so it helps us analyze a market. And again, I'm back to the, you still got to use some shoe leather. It doesn't do you much good to have a really visible sight from the highway if you can't get to it.
Right.
But otherwise, I mean, in all these tools, including the psychographic analysis, the demographic analysis, traffic counts, all of those things.
Right? So what if I wanted to buy Mississippi? If I said, hey, you know what, Mark, let's just go do it. I've got some money and I'm here and I want Mississippi. Could I buy the franchise for only Mississippi?
Yes, and there's a couple of ways to go about it. One is a development agreement where that's all you do. You say, I'm going to build my own stores, and we have a certain there's certain cost to that. Then the next step up is, and it's just a bigger check, but it's you really become a sub-franchisor. So you go in and you develop your pilot stores and training stores. But from there, you get to recruit franchisees. You can play landlord or not. And then you get to share in that royalty stream for a certain
period. Because you hear about all these rich people that have all these stores, or, you know, Shaq's a big, you know, has a lot of franchise and a lot of other people. And James Webb, who was on the program last week, did Orange Theory, and now he's doing something else. And he loves franchises because you don't need to figure it out. It's already there. It just takes capital, which, you know, people that have money do, and I guess they can. So if I said, hey, I want to open up, I don't give you a franchise fee, or you say, well, that's not feasible. But I said, okay, I'll give you $200,000 for Mississippi, and then I'm going to go open up five stores. But how much money does it cost? $200,000, $300,000 to open up a store? $500,000? How much does it just to open up one store to get it all ready to go? And
well,
the perfect little pin drop that you talked about a minute ago.
Federal Trade Commission is really very hard on franchisors about publicly talking about economics. Every franchisor has to have audited statements and has to present an interested party with an FDD, federal disclosure document. And in that document, that at the back, you've got a list of other franchisees and their contact info, so you can get it straight from them, whether the franchisor is, in their view, good or not, is supportive or not. And within the FDD are some costs. So if I start throwing around numbers, by the time I get back to the office, I know two.
All right, we talk about this offline.
Yeah. Okay. But I am pleased to know. And so when I leave here, I'm going to contact the office and let them know you're going to buy Mississippi.
Well, I'm thinking Mississippi and Alabama.
No, well, there you think big, be big.
you gotta have a lot, right? I mean, cash flow is king, and you gotta have cash flow. And with interest rates the way they are today, and the only good investment out there is oil and gas. I mean, we all know that without question. The stock market's overrated. Commercial real estate's going down. Oil and gas is where it is, and in franchises.
Well, and
I think it's a great investment.
And it's interesting.
But you have all these different.
Yeah, and it's interesting because oil and gas certainly has its ups, and when it's up, it's great.
It's awesome.
But when it's down, it's down.
Yeah.
And what we've found, I've been very pleased to find in 08, 09, the short period of time that we had a recession here in Texas, we found we were recession proof. Now, more recently, we've found we're pandemic proof. I mean, when the governor put shelter in place in, we were down for about 4 weeks. And I really think some people thought that meant you couldn't come out of your house.
Mm.
Then we not only had a what I would call a V-shape, it was more like a checkmark recovery. And our sales soared because we had a drive-through.
Yeah.
And we provide let's call it home meal replacement. I'm certainly not the first to use that, but family bundles, boxes of chicken and containers of side items, and our
world. Fletcher's corn dogs. Fletcher's corn dogs. You got to bring that up.
Yeah.
Of course, you got to wait till September to go to Golden Chicken and order those again.
Well, no.
Don't wait until then. I'm not saying you got to go eat the chicken.
Well, and it's interesting. I named a new president last year, Jim Stevens, who's not from here. And funny enough, though, so the guy from the outside sees that the state fair is canceled. And how he knew that Fletcher's corny dogs are a big deal, I have no idea.
Oh, awesome.
But he said, well, why don't we get in touch with the Fletcher's family and see if we can help? And so we did, and it was a grand slam home run for us. This year, the fair would, everyone expects it to be on full swing, so the fair would prefer that we not run that promo during the fair. And so the Fletcher's family is, has, you know, asked that of us, and we said, certainly. So we're going to do it this year, sometime in the summer, and it'll actually just be on weekends. We'll get that word out. But it was funny. I had a lot of people, more than I expected, say to me, oh, Mark, thank you for these corny dogs. And you know, it's the real deal. We bought the hot dog from their supplier. Mm-hmm. We bought everything. And we hand dip it. It wasn't something.
It was just that, like, I mean, I did it like four times. Snuck out of the night.
Yeah. But I had people say, you know, that's the only reason I go to the fair. And I'm saying, really? Man, that means you pay that parking, you pay that admission.
Oh, man, it's got to be a better way.
Yeah.
But so
it was great for us. Yeah. It was really a big
great
promo.
That was great. I mean, I've driven by the Golden Chick there a lot on Hillcrest and Keller Springs, and you know, I've been a few times, but not as many times as I've been when you had the corn dog. I loved it. It was great. Yeah, really, great. Really good. And you have the jalapeno tree. Is it so? Did you treat them all the same, pretty much? Where you're getting you're the franchisor, and
well, in the case, no, they're actually all a little bit different. Golden Chick is mostly franchised. And then there is an immigration program called EB-5. And so we have 15 of these partnerships with foreign investors, and we operate those stores like they're a company store. But otherwise it's
in Golden Chick.
Yeah. In okay. Golden Chick. And otherwise it's, you know, the vast majority are franchises. Jalapeno Tree, on the other hand, is all company stores, and 14 of them in East Texas, and mm-hmm. a lot of smaller towns. I mean, the Longview and Tyler, the
Jacksonville,
two biggest markets, but yeah, Jacksonville, Kilgore, yeah. Nacogdoches. And
I went there on a Friday night. It was absolutely packed.
Yeah.
Packed.
And we are not only back to being over last year, which Jalapeno Tree got hit pretty hard because we didn't have a drive-through, but I have a great partner there, and we were selling margaritas by the gallon, and we tried to retain all the employees that we could, and so we had curbside service, and I mean, people got treated very well because we had plenty of employees to do that. But March and April in particular last year were very hard for us. May saw a little rebound, and then you had the second wave of COVID and back to some more restrictions, and so we got hit. But we're having just a fantastic year now, and we could do even better, but it's very difficult to hire, and not only in the restaurant business, but anywhere. Mm-hmm. I mean, just back from Puerto Rico, and even they were talking about how short they are in employees because, you know, you get, if you're not working, you get state unemployment and $300 federal employment. And so for some servers, you make more sitting at home watching reruns of Gunsmoke than working. Right. And in fact, even if you run the math, and a $15 minimum wage times 40 hours a week, in most states, you're still going to make more sitting at home. And that's going to run through September. And so everybody's just trying to do the best we can. In the case of Jalapeno Tree, we have several of the units now are closed on Mondays, and it's just for staffing. We don't, by order of the governor, we don't have to recognize social distancing anymore. But as a practical matter, because of staffing, issues. We're really not back to full capacity, yet we are over last year's sales or even over 2019 sales. So I think there's been cabin fever and everything else, stimulus money. There's a lot of reasons, but finally, the restaurant business, even without a drive-through, is coming back.
All right, well, hey, Mark, I tell you, you know, you're in great shape. You're optimistic. And you had some health issues. Can you talk about your health issues, but also talk about how you came out of it and how you're so positive and just so gung ho? And
well, I've had two liver transplants.
Wow.
Heart attack, 5 stents, high blood pressure, type 2 diabetes, several bouts with skin cancer.
Mm.
And Jay, other than that, I would be the perfect candidate for life insurance.
Oh my God. Well, you have to thank Bill Romano. He was on the show. I've had Phil on the show a couple times, and he did the stents, the heart stents. Yeah. That's where his deal
was. And it's interesting. I think I've always tried to have a positive attitude, and you know, I've been told I was dying several times, and even had an evening where my wife was going to finally take a break, go out to dinner with some friends. And they told her, you probably shouldn't leave. He may not make it tonight. So, but I've never said, well why me? I've always said, and see, I'm 66 now, but these were back in my 40s. And I've had a fantastic life. Some people didn't like grade school, or they didn't like high school, or they didn't like college. I loved it all. I've been blessed. I've had a great family, born into a good family, loving family. I have a loving family. In a few weeks, I'll have been married for 40 years.
Congratulations.
Well, thank you. And, you know, as one of my friends says, I outkicked my coverage. I certainly got a partner better than I deserve. So I married above myself. I have 2 sons that are, I get to work with both of them. They each went out and tested the world. And then, ultimately came to work for the family, and we have family meetings every other week. And my wife retired from Crow Holdings. As much as she loved Harlan Crow and everyone she worked with, she felt like it was time. And so I gave her a little time off, and then I recruited her. and I used to tease her. I said, well, you know, if you're late again, I'm going to dock your pay. But I didn't pay her, so it was an idle threat. But, and she was a real trooper during all that. She had, you know, 2 sons of high school age to deal with. And then, you know, me, who and I spent a lot of time down at Baylor. I should have a frequent flyer card or something. But Baylor has saved my life, you know, several times, in the transplants, the heart attacks, the stents, the skin cancer, all of those things. But, and I did find, I would see people that were upbeat in the hospital. I saw people that were just, oh, woe is me. And it really clicked with me. The people who were upbeat, whether it was through pain or knowing they had a terminal condition, those people seem to do much better than the oh woe is me-ers. I've just always tried to be upbeat. I'm the luckiest guy in the world. Somebody actually put that in the high school yearbook, and they're right. And I had a friend, my best friend in high school, who was best man at my wedding, and he was always upbeat. In fact, even when he would get mad or he would rail against Richard Nixon or something, you'd have to laugh. Right. I mean, it was just, he didn't have an evil bone or a hateful bone in his body. And that was a big influence on me. I said, you know, what a great guy. And I really need to be more like that instead of a self-centered jerk that I had been and maybe still are. I don't know.
Well, people seem to be like being around you, which that's, you know, it's like, who do you want to hang around? You know, you don't hang around somebody that's grapping at you all the time, or do you want to hang around people that are positive and see the future and what's going on? So let me ask you, what do you see? What do you see with the Golden Chick, the Golden Tree restaurants? Where's your 3-year, 5-year plan?
Well, in hiring Jim Stevens as president, in fact, I started, he didn't know it, but he interviewed for a year. And by that, I mean, we have a mutual acquaintance that put us together. Jim wanted to leave the corporate world and become a franchisee somewhere. Someone told him, you need to really look at Golden Chick. So we talked, and I helped set him up as a franchisee. But once I knew of his background, he didn't know it, but I was watching him. And so after a year went by, everybody was very pleased at how he reacted through training and how he acted as a franchisee and the financial performance that he accomplished as a franchisee. So I began to talk to him about becoming president and me being on the long goodbye. So I feel great. I love what I do and who I do it with. You know, my wife likes to travel, and we were headed down that path, and I do too, we were headed down that path till COVID. In fact, we were in Vietnam and Cambodia with Stephen Piles, and I think Stephen got the last flight out. We were on a different flight, but it was the Chinese New Year, and they were restricting travel. And you knew something was up. And this was, this would have been early January of last year. And so, you know, we get home, and I don't think they had a name for it yet, but there was lots of discussion over there, and then certainly later here.